Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to episode 603 of the Drunk Dashers podcast. I'm your host, as always. I'm Tyler. And join me, we have the man, the myth, the legend himself, Sir Colonel Gables. What's up, buddy?
I'll tell you what, man. I'm feeling pretty much in a good mood after watching some bit of our YouTube videos that we were watching right before started recording. You know, the whole watching game store stuff, this and that. And all of a sudden, going across a random ASMR video.
I didn't know.
Where we thought it was like some sort of like some sort of room or something that someone's just gonna go into, like kind of simulate like a game store experience, and all of a sudden it's just a random lady or some hold up a Super Nintendo and just scratching it and pushing the buttons of it.
Yeah, it was Gables and I were watching like home videos of like people walking around like the Targets and Toys R Us and like the game stores in like the 90s and 2000s, and then I just seen video game store, 90s video game store ASMR. I'm like, oh, okay, so like maybe like there's just a recording of like, you know, it's just sound or something like that. And like, no, it was literally, yeah, it was a girl scratching a Super Nintendo and whispering. It was very uncomfortable.
Man, but other than that though, everything else is going all right. I did have a chance to play a couple different games this week, especially the one that we were provided a review code to. So, yes. Yeah, we can speak a little bit about that as well when we get to what games we've been playing. But other than that, though, it's just been another crazy work week. But how have you been doing, Tyler?
I'm doing all right, you know, clanging and banging as always. Been a little under the weather lately. I've had the flu all week, so made a long week even longer, but... been better, been worse. I don't know about you, Gables. I don't know if do you have like a comfort food thing or like kind of like comfort, like a comforting thing that you do when like you're sick? Like, because for me, whenever I'm sick, I have to watch Gordon Ramsay.
And I don't know why. You have to watch Gordon Ramsay.
Like, I have to watch his shows, and I don't know why. Whenever I get sick, I just watch like Kitchen Nightmares and shit like that. But I've seen them so many times now that like, I don't even I've seen him all like several times at this point. I'm a big fan of him. He's my man crush, you know, Gordon Ramsay. I don't know why. It's just comforting to me. But anyways, I started watching fucking Hell's Kitchen, but I started I started from the beginning, so I'm watching the 2005 season. Let me tell you, it's great. It's funny though. What blew my mind, Gables, is there's a dude on here on the show.
Yeah.
Named Ralph.
Yeah.
Nice guy. Like that guy. Italian dude. Very little eccentric, you know, classic Italian guy, kind of what you expect. And I'm like, God, this guy, I'm like, I was trying to like figure out their ages and stuff. And I was like, this guy is like, you know, and it's probably in his 40, like mid to late 40s, 36. I'm like, oh my God, is this what people like when they look at me in their 20s think that I look like? Like, is this like, this is kind of, I was like having a minor like freak out. I'm like, cause I feel like people probably think I'm younger. You know, like I when I look at pictures, maybe it's like it's a redhead thing. Maybe where like, unfortunately, like when I see people like I went to high school with, sometimes it's like I don't even recognize them. But it's like,
God,
people see me like, you know, when it's the other way around, just I don't know if it's a redhead thing or what. But it's like I look like I just look the same to them. Probably just fatter. That's like the only difference is like probably in the last 20 years is like Tyler looks exactly the same as he did when we went to high school together in the 2000s. He's just fatter now, and I'm like, eh. I don't know. That's kind of what I think. I don't know. I'm just kind of interested. Interesting. It's blew my mind. But anyways, I don't know. Doing all right. You know, just clanging and banging. Same old, but just telling you, I'm hooked now. This Hell's Kitchen. It's been out for 20 years.
Boy.
Why didn't anybody tell me? You know, it's a great show. Highly recommend it.
That's just kind of crazy. Just thinking about that for a moment. It's like your comfort thing is like watching Hell's Kitchen, like Gordon Ramsay stuff and just in general.
Yeah.
Oh man, there's like a couple things I do, like whenever I'm feeling like I'm sick or under the weather or something like that, for watching content and stuff. Like some of it gets me to watch the original like Yu-Gi-Oh stuff, and then like that's pretty much how it's been like for the past like week or two for me, to where it's like just randomly I went on the Tubi and I'm like, okay, well let's see what I can find. Like, oh, they got all the original Yu-Gi-Oh series here from like Kids WB, and then. You know what? Yeah, I'm in the mood. I'm looking for some campy stuff. So just watching that and like a friggin' in season two right now, the Battle City stuff.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah, man. I'm just chugging away at it. You know, yeah. I'm just like chipping away at little bits and pieces of episodes because I haven't done a full watch through of that series in like years
at
this point. Not since they were like originally on WB way back when, and there where you're just spoon fed like about an episode every week.
Yeah, we used to get two episodes every, I remember, but I don't know, something about just being sick, laying on the couch, sweating on a fever, and like sleeping all day, but like every now and again waking up to a British man yelling at somebody. I don't know. It's just comforting me. I don't know what it is, but other than that, this is a video game podcast where Gables and I get together every week and talk about video games and everything we love about them and also sometimes hate about them. But yeah, if you guys like this, like our show, please like, follow, subscribe, check us out. We're on every podcast service. We're on Twitter, Facebook, we're on YouTube. So please, YouTube's a big thing we're pushing. So if you can go there, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, leave a comment, tell us what you think, tell your friends. Apple Podcast, Spotify, like I said, Facebook, Twitter, all those places are on them. Just look for us, Drunk Nerds Podcast. You'll find us. Excuse me, I had a burp there. But without further ado, Gables, let's get into some of the news going on this week. So kind of some bigger stories kind of dropping off as the week goes on. But this one's kind of came out of nowhere Friday night. So it is Saturday night as of recording this.
Yeah.
So not too much has been followed up on because it was kind of like one of those things that unfortunately kind of dropped Friday. You got a lot of people are at PAX East right now too. There's a lot of people that would probably add more context to this and also right. Like I said, it happens on a Friday night. Sounds like potentially Gables GTA 6 a little bit of trouble right now. So Kotaku kind of broke the story initially, and some more people have kind of added some stuff since then. But it sounds like there are some issues at Rockstar where they were hoping this game would be like a Q1 2025 game, so meaning like January through March, because kind of just based off of 2K or Take-Two's fiscal predictions for the next fiscal year, is like okay, they had a huge increase they were expecting, and then the next quarterly financials, they kind of like brought it back down. So I think that was a lot of people were like, okay, sounds like GTA 6 probably got delayed there out of into the next quarter or out of past March of next year. Some of the points here now is right now it's planned for spring, but now it is potentially looking like fall of next year is plausible. Potentially 2026 is on the table.
Ooh boy. There must have been some serious stumbles if they are now projecting even as far back. Now, far forward now is 2026. I mean, God, how I just kind of wonder what went on during the initial like meeting of it, because it's like, how in the hell are you supposed to explain to your investors after going with like random, well, just an estimated date where you can expect this game at and stuff, and all of a sudden looking and seeing how much cost you yet still have to do in order to get this game completely finished. Yeah. I mean, we know it's a GTA game. We knew this was going to be taking a hell of a long time, like, in order to get it developed. But, oh boy, man. It's like, how much more are they going to invest into this initial game here?
The last GTA they put out is the best-selling game of all time. So,
yes, that's point, true.
And it's still incredibly financially successful. So, I mean, over a decade later. So, they're probably willing to put as much money into it they have to, but yeah, they're probably like,
right.
The sooner we can get this out, the better. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's one of those things though where it's like, I remember at the Xbox presentation they did in 2021, I want to say, for the Xbox Bethesda one. Remember they put out the, what was it, the 10-10-22 or whatever it was for Starfield?
Yep.
And it's like, they put that out and like, reports came out later on that like, basically everybody, all the like people that actually make the work on the game were like, they found out that date was the planned release date when we found out. And they're like, that's not going to happen. So it's probably one of those things where it's like, they only said blankets. They said 2025 is all Rockstar said in that trailer. They didn't say Q1, Q2, anything like that.
Yeah. They didn't give any type of like major concrete win in 2025.
Yeah, so I think the issue really is they just projected it. You know, we kind of gathered the release date because of Take-Two's projections for revenue for the next fiscal year. So it's not like anything they've said out loud, like, hey, we're expecting it here. But I mean, obviously, like, it's like a take-your-time situation there. But, yeah, it is pretty crazy. It's like, you know, obviously games take longer. We know all that, but I don't know if it's like, I don't know if it's like a thing of like the game's necessary. Maybe I shouldn't say it in trouble or, but it could just be, this is like a natural, just, it's not going to be ready when they want to be ready type of thing. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of downside is when this is like probably the most, I think it's kind of fair to say the most anticipated game of all time. At this point,
yes, it is definitely one of the most anticipated games of all time because it's piggybacking off the success of a game previously to where it's the biggest game in the franchise that's literally been on game sales charts for more than 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, obviously it's like one thing where we take a time, but I mean, obviously Rockstar has a really, really bad history of like crunch. Like they're one like in an industry full of like crunch. And people are going to be like, ooh, well, everybody's got to work overtime. Like, the difference is, like, when you're working, like, working 50 hours a week, 60 hours a week, yeah, it sucks. But it's like, these people were working, like, 80 to 100 hours a week for months on end.
Yes, they were.
And that was something that was happening with GTA 5 and Red Dead Redemption. So, like, there's reports that their, you know, staff were worried that they're going to make them do this crunch culture, do crunch again. Because I remember even, like, Naughty Dog made a big point about getting rid of crunch after Uncharted 4. And watching that, the new Naughty Dog, the Grounded 2 for Last of Us Part 2, they were crunching to get Last of Us Part 2 out. So this is like, that's a less than 4 year old game. So it's like, it's not like this shit's been gone. It's not like it's gone. It's probably still happening in places. So, you know, like we all want our games. Yeah. Like sometimes, yeah, it's a little disappointing and a little frustrating sometimes when games get delayed, but it's like, I don't know, like if I want games keep happening, we want these people to be happy and keep working at these places. So I hope that doesn't happen. But like if it has to get delayed, it has to get delayed, it's whatever. But what does suck is like we talk about all these like all the turmoil and the issues and the layoffs, everything that's happening going on in the game industry. It's like the motto for this year that I've heard from people saying at multiple like gaming events, whether it's been at the award shows, whether it's been at like PAX East, GDC, whatever, has been just get to 2025 because of like they just need that next big boom. And everybody's looking at GTA 6 and the next Switch as being like the big boom. That kind of like, you know, what is that? Rising tides raises all boats type of thing where, you know, because it's like this holding pattern where like big games are coming out. More people than ever are playing games. More people are spending money than ever on games. But like, obviously it's just, you put a game out for $200 million and it sells 2 million copies. It's not enough anymore. You know, are you sold?
No.
You put out a game that like, even if you put out, you know, PlayStation put out, Insomniac put out Spider-Man 2, the best-selling PlayStation game, one of the best-selling PlayStation games of all time, one of the fastest-selling PlayStation games of all time. 3 months later, laid off a bunch of staff. So, it's a lot of things going on where everybody's just kind of freaking out, doesn't know what to do. So,
right.
And I think people up top, people on the bottom, everybody's looking at like those two things coming as like we just desperately need that shot in the arm to kind of get things going again. It just kind of sucks that like one potentially is getting moved, you know, for a whole year later and, you know, the Switch 2 got delayed into early next year. So, maybe on Nintendo's end though, they're probably kind of like wiping their forehead a little bit like, oh, thank God. Like we don't have to contend. I know it's Nintendo's Nintendo, but like, you don't want to, even Nintendo's like, doesn't want to probably come out around the same time as a GTA 6 launch.
Nobody wants to come out around the same time of a major Grand Theft Auto launch at this point.
Yeah.
But it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me that a lot of game developers, a lot of companies in general, are waiting for that next big thing to come across and to happen. And a lot of them depending upon Nintendo's next system. That doesn't surprise me at all because of how successful the Switch was and stuff. But just to make it to 2025, just to have something incur to where it would allow them to not only possibly have Nintendo have their next big boom with their next system, but the sales upon people wanting to get this new system, plus putting games on this new system leading over to like 2026. I mean, yeah, it's going to be a bit longer and there are definitely going to be some times the next couple of years where we're not going to get as readily as many game releases as we were like not even like say for a year ago, you know, or like something like that. I mean, I think That definitely is concerning when you have some aspect, but at the same point, video games themselves, they're still being made. There are still good quality games that are in the pipe works that will come out. And on top of that, when it comes to games that are going to be released in the next few years, I mean, a lot of us just need to be a little bit more patient for them to come out. That's just what I feel about it anyway.
Well, it's like the CEO of Larian, I believe is how you pronounce it, the made Baldur's Gate 3. So they just had the I think it was the GDC Awards. And like they won a bunch of awards, you know, they won Game of the Year and stuff like that. And he came out and, you know, he's not, you know, he's a, they're an independent company. So he came out and he like did this whole speech about how kind of like basically just like ripping on these like companies for all these layoffs and anything like that. Basically just saying it's completely short-sighted. It's just like kind of what people have been saying, we've been saying, where it's just like they're just looking at the next quarterly report and not necessarily looking at the, you know, the next year, 2 years, 3 years from now. He's like, all these companies laying people off, we're going to realize in a year that, you know, like, hey, you need these people to make these games, so you're gonna have to go hire new people. And the it's funny coming off of you know, coming off of the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, the big thing that they talked about was like what made, because they you know, they got a new one out 4 years, you know, that's a decently long development cycle, but pretty short nowadays, especially for a game
It's
the size of Rebirth.
especially for Square Enix. I mean, come on, this is like a 10-year cycle type of like game development cycle you used to do.
Yeah, remember the, like Final Fantasy 15 came out, like it took like 8 years to come out, and the game wasn't even finished when the game came out, and it was never finished. But anyways, he said like one of the directors and stuff said like the key thing for Rebirth was the fact that they just had, they used all the same people from Remake, and then they're gonna do the same thing for the third one, and it's like
Good.
yeah, which is great. And it's just like, hey, it's just like it makes it a lot easier to like make the next big game. When you're already working with a bunch of people, you don't have to train a bunch of new people, and you have a bunch of people that weren't around when you made the first one. So, yeah. So, anyways, kind of got on a tangent there, but yeah, obviously it's with GTA 6 going back to that. It's like, yeah, take your time, type of thing. Like, this game is gonna, you know, I feel like, yeah, like you said, everybody just needs to be more patient. Maybe not us, like gamers as a whole. I think it's the people, the execs need to be a little more fucking patient on this stuff, because yeah, when that game comes out, that game's gonna be extremely profitable. Day one, the second the game is out, they've already made their money back. So it's just a
Right.
matter of like waiting. And yeah, it's gonna suck for those people. Like, it's, you know, like it's easy for me to say because I'm like a huge GTA 6 guy. So I'm like, well, will I buy it when it comes out? Most likely, yeah. But like, I'm not like, you know, foaming at the mouth for that, for the next one. So and yeah, they're like you
Right.
said, Gables. There's a ton of great games that have come out and are still coming out. So I think people like you and me will be fine.
Yeah, we'll be absolutely fine. I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah. Next up here, I was gonna switch some stuff around here. Sorry, give me 1 second, folks. Bam. All right. Next up here, so going to PlayStation here. Apparently, they are stopping production on PSVR 2s for the time being, just because there is a just a ton that they've made. They're just sitting on shelves and was buying. I guess as of right now, they've produced over 2 million units. No idea how many are sitting around. We don't know. We do know like the initially, I think like the first like that first like month or so, they're on shelves. Like they sold a few hundred thousand units. I remember that story came out from, I believe it was Jason Schreier and Bloomberg, about how they actually like drastically cut back on production for like for launch because just the pre-orders were so bad. And that story came out. I remember PlayStation came out though and like said that it's not true, but never got an actual answer. And obviously PlayStation would never admit to that, even if it was true.
No.
I'm gonna go with Jason Schreier on this one, because I can't remember a time when he was wrong. But apparently just no, people aren't buying this thing. You know, we've seen from PlayStation though is like there hasn't been like a lot of, even like we watch these state of plays, we watch these showcases. There's not a lot of big support for these things. Like there's a section usually, but it's like usually like games that are just being ported to it, and not actually very rarely are you getting like exclusives, or like, or maybe you get like, hey, we like GTA 7 or GTA 7, GT7, or they did do the what was it, Horizon Call of the Mountain. There's like the Resident Evil games of like exclusive on there. The was it 8 and 4 are exclusive on there. Recently, they also closed down London Studios, who made the Horizon game, and FireSprite was like they're probably the second biggest VR maker. They had a bunch of layoffs there, so we're seeing like not a lot of some major support from the company about putting games out to buy for this thing. And they also recently announced that they are looking into adding PC support, so you'll be able to hook your PSVR 2 up to your PC and play your games on like your PC VR games on your PSVR 2. So I guess they're doing something here. Seems like that's like the least they can do is the PC support stuff, but I don't know, Gables. Like, what do you think about this one?
Well, it doesn't surprise me that they had to reduce the amount, of like the PSVR 2 stuff coming, like being produced and stuff. But it kind of just confirms what I've kind of thought initially when it launched and stuff. It's like there was some people that were interested, but I just had that sort of feeling to where this PSVR 2 would not initially sell as much as like what people would have expected. I mean, granted, the biggest thing here is inconsistency, and unfortunately, Sony as a company, they have a history of whenever it comes to certain like PlayStation products and stuff, they do initially do the launch, and people really love some like the ideas that they've had, like say for the PlayStation I or the PlayStation Vita or PSP. Any of that's or the PSP or the PlayStation TV or wherever the heck, and then they may follow with support for about a year or something, or maybe sometimes not even that, maybe 6 months, and then all of a sudden they just start dwindling interest in it. Like, as soon as it doesn't make the initial bucos of, like, money that they think should, it's like it starts to decrease in some of the waning of it. But that in and of itself kind of leads me to believe, though, they are adding PC support to try to get more people to experiment with the technology itself. Because I think that at this point, they are pretty much wrapping things up of what they want personally to do with the PSVR 2.
Yeah.
If they only have been getting a couple hundred thousand people maybe buy this system at most, and they're starting to dwindle in terms of the games that they want to come to the system on top of other companies that were interested in making certain ports for that VR system, but don't want to because it would be much more profitable to do it on another like VR headset, like say a Vive or like a Get or whatever, like say what Facebook is doing with or something Quest. With the MetaQuest stuff. Mm. And it's the VR 2 isn't as appealing for certain third parties to put their like game products on. The cost in and of itself has remained mostly the same since it's initially launched.
Yeah.
They have a huge surplus, so yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all that they are reducing things down to the extent it is. And hopefully, with this added PC support, it's going to spur some bit of interest for some interested people in order to maybe come up with different alternatives of the PSVR 2 other than just, say, playing games. I mean, that's always like a possibility that could happen. Or it could lead to maybe new breakthroughs in some aspects of like the whole VR gaming sort of thing. I mean, that's also a possibility, too. But I don't think the VR 2 right now is just completely dead. I don't think that at all. I think that it's hasn't found its niche inside of the marketplace of willing for people to justify purchasing it. That's
yeah. Okay.
Kind of that. But anyways,
yeah.
What do you think?
You're honestly more optimistic than I am, and that's yeah. Usually it's the other way around on this one. I think it's not dead, but I think it's definitely like on life support. I feel like it launched and it was like a person that like never rode a snowboard before decided to go down the mountain its first time, and then like it went down and immediately crashed into a tree, and like as soon as it launched, it was in a coma. Basically, and this thing has just been in a coma. It feels like since it came out, like and it's something we talked about this going into it, like before it came out, where it's like cool, like the Horizon game looks like a fun little thing, like. a fun experience, I guess to call it. But like we were going into it, I'm like, all right, there's not really a, like, what are we doing after this? You know, like what's the big thing?
Yeah.
And we never really got that, and we still haven't really seen
it.
No,
we didn't.
We've seen like obviously the Resident Evil stuff. You know, that's cool. But it's been like, you know, the Grand Theft Auto 7. That's cool, but it's like, I don't know. These are just like little add-on things. These aren't like, I don't know if these are necessarily system seller, especially where like, you know, Grand Theft Auto 7, these Resident Evil games, you can already play these games normally, and it's like, hey, this is a cool little thing. Like, because that was something I remember with PSVR, like the first one when they came out, that was the thing people were doing, was like they were adding a mode to their game, but like they're at least adding like a mode that was separate from the main game that you can do in it.
Right.
No, I was like, okay, right. That's kind of cool. But they also, they were doing a really good job of supporting it. And I remember like, I bought the PSVR 1 and I was like, it's kind of cool for what it was, but I was like, it was kind of like that where it's like, you know, I was just like, it was the upgrade. It was the modern day to what motion controls were, you know, in the 2000s, where everybody right. went nuts. We had the Kinect. We had, what was the fucking PlayStation version with the stupid
one? Was the Move.
The Move. That, speaking of things that came out and just immediately died, you know, like, it was like, to me, it was just like, I don't know, it just felt like a niche thing. It was definitely a niche thing, but it was like, I don't know, cool, this is kind of fun, but it's like, I don't, like, what am I doing here long term? Like, every time, like, I want to play a game on, or like, people want to come over and like check it out for, you know, once. And that was it. That was kind of basically what the Wii was for, like, a lot of like the yep. casual people, where it's like, cool, like, but then like, oh, but the problem is like, the Wii, it was like $200 and you just got Wii Sports and you're fine. But this thing is like, well, you got to buy a PS4, then you got to buy mm-hmm. the headset, and that's basically almost the price of the console. And then there's like 15 cables you got to hook up, but they all got to hook up to a certain thing, certainly. And there's this weird giant map you got to use. And this one, okay, with PSVR 2, they like fix it where like it's only one cord, which is great, but it's like, it's all, okay, it costs more than the console. Ooh, and like, the price point isn't, I don't think, the major issue, because, I mean, it's an issue, but the price point is comparable or cheaper than pretty much, you know, like the Vive and everything everybody else does. That's the going rate for what VR is. But the problem is like, it's still very expensive. And then on top of that, you got to buy a $500, console to play it on. You know, like adding PC support, I think could help, but it's like, if I'm going to get a VR headset, like how many casual people are going to go like get a VR headset and think to get the PlayStation VR 2, instead of like just get the Meta Quest, where like the Meta Quest, if you get the Meta Quest is like, it's its own thing, and you don't even have to hook up to a PC to play some of these games, you know? So, you're going to buy the one that actually is built to support the thing that if you're going to buy one that hooks up to a PC, I'm going to buy the one that's built for that thing. And also I can use my Steam library and all that shit for. So, I don't know. Like I've been, you know, like I said, I bought the VR, the PSVR one, but I've just been kind of out on VR since the beginning. Like I bought mine. It was like $200. That's the only reason I did it. And I said this at the time where like all these studios were buying, all these like, you know, people, headset makers were buying up these studios that were doing good jobs and making quality VR games. And the problem was like, and making it exclusive for their headset. And like, that's great for that headset. But the problem is like this VR is for what it is. It's still like, it's an infant here. And, you know, like we got to grow this thing. We got to build this thing. But then everybody's quickly, it's an arms race to buy up studios to make games for exclusively for these platforms. Then the thing's too spread thin. So you can't like, cool. Like, well, there's like, this one has like two good games. This one has one good game. This one has three good games. Instead, like if everybody just had their own thing, like everybody had their own headset, and then these studios could put games in every single one. You got a decent little collection going here. You got a stew going, you know?
Right.
And it's just, I feel like it spread the market too thin, too quickly. And you know, yeah, you got like, it sold, I think the first one sold 5 million units, but that felt to me like almost like a flash in the pan. And like that VR headset wasn't very good compared to other VR headsets, but it was affordable. And that's
right.
You know, the key there. Like, you know, like I said, like the, you know, the Wii was affordable. You know, it was like a lot of people also had PlayStation 4 at that point, was just dominating everybody. So it was easy, you know, like a lot of people already had a PlayStation, so boom, got a VR headset for it. But now we're in this point where, you know, I think what we got like 50 million PSVR or PS5s out there. I mean, how many, I don't know. I don't know what they would have thought this would need to sell to be a success. I'm assuming probably, you know, probably not $20 million, but they probably, if it was sold a few million, they probably been pretty happy with it, I bet. But I don't know. I just, to me, like, I don't think VR, like, I think honestly, Apple with the Apple Pro, whatever the fuck that thing is called, I think like that is the evolution of what VR could be. Obviously, it's, you know, it's the $3,000 headset, so it's not, doesn't even play games yet. But I feel like what that will be eventually will be the future, because you look at, you know, when the Apple Watch came out, I think it was like $800, and like the initial one. Now it's a couple $100, and it's, you know, a lot of people have smartwatches now. So I think if anybody can make VR a thing, it's Apple. And I'm curious, like, I feel like that's the last shot VR has to actually really take off. Cause I don't know. I've never been a huge VR guy. I've never been a huge believer in it. And yeah, we'll have to wait and see, but yeah, I'm rooting for it to work out. I'm not rooting against it, but it's just like, I just don't see it. But, Gables, let's move on here to some, one of my favorite things to cover every month, the February, Circana report. This is the, report that goes through the top 20 selling games of the month from the previous month. This is only US based. This is in dollar sales, not in actual, like, you know, individual sales. So anyways, gaming over year over year is up 2%. So everybody's freaking out and laying off everybody off.
Okay. But, hey,
gaming's up. Well, that's weird. So it's up 25% since 2019, I believe. So that's pretty crazy. Hardware is down though, about 30%. I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, I think it's probably just another year of the Switch being out. And then also last year was like, that was the first time you were able to buy like Xboxes and PlayStations, like kind of somewhat regularly in stores. So I think that has a lot to do with it. Okay, let's get to the top 20 games. All right. So there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 brand new games. Gable, actually 4. I'll explain the fifth one here when we get there. There's 4 brand new games of February that are on this list. I'm gonna where do you think Skull and Bones placed?
Where do or I actually think better Skull yet, and Gables, Bones placed?
Did it place?
Now that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think that it did place on the top 20, and I'm going to say that it probably priced outside the top 10. I think it probably was at spot number 16.
Okay.
That's what I'm guessing.
Gables, what if I told you Skull and Bones was 4th?
What?
Yeah, I know, right?
It was for all of the crazy crap that game has been going through. People had enough interest to buy this game to make it 4th place in the Circana sales charts.
Yeah,
what is wrong with people?
I don't know, Gables. Miitopia is a multi-million seller on fucking Switch. Okay, there's some bad people in the world. Okay.
But there are better pirate ship games than this.
It's just,
I don't get it.
Probably just see a pirate game, Skull and Bones. They see Ubisoft and like, they probably, those people say people probably like, I don't know, man. There's bad people, Gables. I'm just going to put the Miitopia, Skull and Bones people and pedophiles in the same fucking pile.
I think that's Jesus, really all. I wouldn't go that far, dude.
That's still really all deserved to be. I'm putting them there. All right. Okay. Next up here, Gables. Mario versus Donkey Kong.
All right, Mario versus Donkey Kong. Probably like a number 20.
You're going to put it at number 20? Less than Skull and Bones?
Yeah, it's probably less than Skull and Bones.
Oh, you're right about that one. It's actually 11th. So
11th? Yeah. Okay, so it's out of the top 10, but it definitely wasn't like bottom of the list. That's good to know.
All right. We'll do one more here, and I'll explain the rest later. Helldivers 2. Okay.
Helldivers 2, I think, was probably within the top 5, and I think it was probably like a number 2.
Number 1.
Yes!
You got one. You got one.
I'm happy about that one.
I'm not even giving a shit about Skull and Bones, because when I was like looking at the list, I was like, I basically had the same reaction you did when I saw it number 4. So some news on here. Helldivers 2 became the best-selling premium game of February based on physical and full game digital sales. It also became the best-selling title on both PS5 and PC for its month.
Wow.
It was actually... Okay, let me see if I can find... There's another thing here. Oh, okay. Helldivers 2 launch month dollar sales represents the seventh highest total ever achieved by a Sony-published title in the U.S.
That is crazy to think about. And I'm so glad that this was a good success story, because Helldivers 2, I mean, even coming before its launch and stuff, not a lot of people had like a lot of hopes for it. I mean, we were kind of down on it too before it initially launched, but it's just the outpouring of support for like just the people from the community, and also in terms of people streaming it, and then the PR, like masterpiece PR that they've been doing online and stuff. That's awesome. I'm really glad that with that game debuting when it did and stuff, it was number one in the sales charts.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Matt Piscatello was explaining that he's the one that puts the report together. He's really great on Twitter. If you're on there, I highly recommend him. Give him a follow if you're interested in this stuff. He was pointing out that Helldivers is like completely been bucking the trend of like gaming. Normally, like, and like most things, when it comes out, that's typically the peak for that thing when it comes out.
Right.
And Helldivers, because of word of mouth and everything like that, has been, grew, the sales went up for 4 straight weeks after it launched, which is incredible. They did also say that over 60% of the sales have been on Steam, so that's pretty interesting.
Oh.
It was also the number one most played game on Steam in February. Pretty shocked.
It's still selling at number one right now on Steam.
Is it really? Okay, wow, that's incredible.
Yes.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. I love that. Shockingly, Gable's number two most played game on Steam in February, Pal World. So, pretty
that
interesting.
That doesn't surprise me.
I'm a little surprised. I guess it's one of those things where it's like, I hear multiple people say like, "Oh, that game blew up," and now no one ever talks about it. It's like, I don't know. It's one of those things where like, no, quite people. It's just not like the big hot thing.
It's
anymore.
The opposite.
It's just
not.
Like, people are still playing it. It's just not. No one's really talking about it. I don't know. It's like when you hear about those games that like I had never heard of Monopoly Go until this week. And apparently it's the most popular game in gaming right now. It made over $2 billion in revenue in 9 months. So,
wow.
But let's get into the top 20 here, Gables. Number 20, look, I'm just holding on. The little game that could, Avatar Frontiers of Pandora. Pandora. number 19 here, Rainbow Six Siege. Look at that. Over a decade now, just fucking out there doing its work. Number 18, Mortal Kombat 1. Number 17, Mario Kart 8. Number 16, Minecraft. Number 15, Super Mario Bros. Wonder. Number 14, Elden Ring. Number 13, Spider-Man 2. Number 12, FC 24. Number 11, we already talked about Mario vs. Donkey Kong. Number 10, Hogwarts Legacy. Number 9, still holding on the top 10, Gables, Persona 3 Reload.
Wow.
I'm going to skip number 8. I'm going to come back to it.
Okay.
Number 7, Suicide Squad. Still around. Number 6, Number 6, Madden. Number 5, Tekken 8. Number 4, Skull and Bones. Number 3, Modern Warfare 3. Number 2, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Do you want to point out, this report went from February 4th to March 2nd. So basically had the first 3 days on the market for Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And number 1, like we mentioned, Helldivers 2. I want to skip number 8 here because it's totally, this is one of the weirdest things. This is one of the weirdest things I've seen since the month Multiverses came out, and it was like the most bought.
Yes.
It was like number 1 on that month. So number 8 was also Final Fantasy VII, but it was the Remake Rebirth Twin Pack.
So the bundle.
Yeah, which is weird because they're both $70. So, because you could pre-order it was a really weird bundle they did. So you can buy the twin pack for $70, or you can just buy the game individually for $70. It's basically just a way like, hey, if you pre-ordered and bought the game, you got the remake for free, and you could play through that before Rebirth came out. I've never seen it split up before. I thought that was really weird. So, Final Fantasy VII is 2nd and 8th for the month of February. So,
wow,
yeah, so pretty funny there. I think that was pretty much all I had on news for that. Yeah. So, but yeah, pretty cool little month there. It's always like exciting. I love seeing the Helldivers number 1. Obviously, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, which I'll talk about a little bit more later on that. But it's kind of just a fun little month. I enjoyed this month. It was fun to look at this one. What about you, Gables?
Yeah, it's definitely a big surprise, though. I mean, Helldivers 2 is pretty much the biggest surprise of them all. But seeing it's Final Fantasy VII, like, being on the list twice just for different reasons is kind of hilarious, too. But I'm also kind of glad to seeing, like, particular games that are still on that initial top 20 and stuff, like Persona 3 Reload being one, obviously, and like Mario Donkey Kong being 11. That's kind of a shame, but at the same time, you know, the game wasn't going to last too long inside that top 10 anyway. Yeah.
Well, that's his first month on there, so yeah. Probably won't be there next month.
No, most likely not. But other than that, though, I mean, I thought it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. How much more likely are you to buy Skull and Bones now?
Less likely. Actually, this is even less likely to even wanting to be interested in playing anything remotely close to Skull and Bones.
I know what I'm getting to get you at our gift exchange. I'm going to create a gift exchange. We don't actually had one, but I'm just going to create one just so I can mail you a copy of it.
God.
All right, let's move on here to the last topic we got here, Gables. So there's been some more issues going on at Bungie. Rebecca Valentine over at IGN had a really great report. She's done some really great reporting in the past on Bungie before, and she's been pretty spot on about it. But it's getting worse, Gables. Obviously there's been like all the turmoil with Destiny going on for a while now. They had the big layoffs into last year, then come to find out actually this place is way worse than we thought it was going to be, or way worse than we thought it was. And now we come to find out 9 months ago, they actually got rid of the director of Marathon and replaced him with the director who was the game director of Valorant. He is now working on Marathon. They've done a lot of major changes to the actual game itself. It went from one of the main things they mentioned was it was going to be like you create your own character. Now it's going to be a hero shooter.
Okay.
Yep. There are so some more stuff here. There's a ton of info on this article. I recommend you go check it out. But these are just some of the clip notes I found. There are growing fears and rumors that layoffs will immediately follow after its release. One person with knowledge of budgets at Bungie told them that nothing adds up and something will need to happen to curb costs unless the final shape does so well it covers the gap and people can move to Marathon. Obviously, we heard the reports about how like if they didn't hit financial goals, then because when PlayStation bought them, they're independent. Right. They're actually owned by Sony, I should say. When Sony bought them, instead of being ran by PlayStation, their own thing, Sony actually, they talk directly to Sony. But there are certain things certain financial goals they have to hit to keep that independence. So that's kind of what's going on. And then we also heard about the layoffs that happened. And basically, when the layoffs happened, those people that were like supposed to get a percentage of the sale from PlayStation, like they were weeks away from hitting it, and they laid those people off. And then the heads of Bungie get to keep that money. So it's just kind of fucked up. But some other stuff here. They had two other games in development when they were bought by PlayStation. They were codenamed Gummy Bear and Matter. One has been canceled. The other one has been put on hold. There is growing expectation that senior company leadership will leave in droves in the summer of 2026 because that's when the final payouts from the Sony acquisition will happen. With this in mind, there is a strong push to get Marathon out the door before then, and let whoever takes the reins after that, most likely Sony, will have to worry about how to keep it sustained. Then internally, people feel that Final Shape needs to succeed or things will just continue to get worse. So a lot there, a lot to unpack. I know, Gables, you're I'd say you're a lot like a lot of Destiny fans where you, I mean, maybe not like a lot of them because like you stopped playing it mostly, like you jump back in for the expansions, but like it seems like most Destiny fans actually that they keep playing it, but they like hate that thing more than they hate the game more than anything, but they keep playing it. And you've definitely the last couple like the last year and a half or so have been pretty negative on Destiny 2. But I mean, how's this making you feel, buddy? Hearing all this stuff.
Well, it certainly doesn't give me any like a vote of confidence. It sounds like more of a out of the frying pan into the fire. That's just the kind of situation that Bungie is in currently. Being a fan of Destiny 2, I mean, yeah, there's just a lot of there have been like a lot of decent stuff that Bungie has done to help support that game, and then there's been plenty of like very much questionable stuff, obviously. But this really makes me sort of concerned about the final shape, and not just with the final shape, but just Bungie's future in general. Because that type of culture, that work culture, where they don't even, they are very fearful of what's going to happen after a project is done. I mean, it just sounds like, it almost sounds like a no-win situation for almost everyone involved inside that, to where it's like Sony's going to lose a lot of money because they were expecting Bungie to do these financials, like sales, like past these markers, especially when it came to Bungie's last major DLC and stuff for Destiny 2 last year, and that didn't even hit anywhere close.
Yeah.
But what I am definitely hoping for is like, I'm hoping that the final shape is going to be somewhat successful, because what's keeping really the Destiny 2 community that's like even on trajectory right now, you know, by the finest of lines and stuff, has been what they have been doing to add some more interest in terms of having some bit of like season stuff before leading up to the final shape in June. Obviously, I have not played any of single one of that before then and stuff, and I've had friends like PM me and interested, like, hey, we should play this, or hey, you know, they added this, and that. I'm like, I do respect that that there are plenty of my friends out there that do still love playing Destiny 2, that are still trying to get their raids, still trying to do their stuff. And I mean, hey, there are people that will still want and love to do their like their weeklies, their this and that and stuff, but it's gonna take a lot more than that for anything, if for Bungie to get a lot of the fans that they used to have before dropping off of, say, Destiny 2, to really invest into the final shape as being it, like anything that's big, you know. Because as far as I'm concerned, you know, it's if this isn't going to be successful, the final shape, this last expansion here, this is going to be one of the final hurrahs that we know from like Bungie personally. Because I'm not saying outright it's going to be like just going to be like, oh, overnight they're just going to go and implode, and this is, no, I'm talking about if they do not nail, a lot of things are riding on the line here for the success of the final shape, you
Yeah.
know, not just for the Destiny 2 community, but just for the major profit things to keep their independence and stuff from being pretty much invaded in by Sony, because they're not hitting their profit margins, you
Yeah.
know. So a lot of, probably a lot of like overtime, probably like a lot of like stresses and stuff, and it's horrible to hear that there are people very much fearful for their jobs because of what happens after Marathon could potentially come out. But now hearing rumors about how that's been convention, all that conventional thing that was shown to us initially can be pretty much scrapped because they had to pretty much redo a lot of the premise of Marathon itself as a hero shooter. I mean, you know, I don't want to be negative about this, but at the same time, a spade is a spade here.
Yeah.
Bungie needs to get its act together really quick if they want to keep on making the games they want to make.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I played the Destiny 2 base game. I played both of the base games. I love them. I bounced out quickly after some of the expansions came out. But I mean, I'm rooting for I'm rooting for the people there. I'm not necessarily rooting for Bungie. I'm rooting for the people that work there. I want,
Right,
obviously,
absolutely.
I've told stories before on this podcast about, I've been in these situations where it's just like you're just waiting, with like late massive layoffs, like places are closing, and it's just like it's just a miserable.
It's,
It's a I go ahead.
well, it's one of those things, Tyler, where you know what's going to happen. You know, you absolutely know what's going to happen. You could see it coming from a mile away. You try to say to people, hey, this is going to go ahead and happen. Of course, they're not going to believe you. All of a sudden, it's like everything that you thought was going to happen did happen. And then everybody else is just leaving. How the hell did this happen?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess in this case, like we there's been enough stories that come out that we kind of like the writing's in the wall. If Final Shape does not become the success that they think it can be, or hoping it can be, I should say, we at least like, oh, okay, like we kind of knew this is coming. It's just kind of sad, where it's like 2 years ago, like, even a year ago, like, I would, when we talk about Destiny 2, I was like, yeah, there's definitely issues there, but it's like, outside of like Fortnite, who's better at live service than them? And then come to find out the studio that they basically they sold to Sony because they were struggling. Like, you know, they kind of like, and it wasn't even like a Sony thing. We're like, Xbox, Microsoft was like, and I think Tencent and like multiple bidders are out there trying to like buy them up. And that's part of the reason why they got to keep their independence and like they're under Sony and not PlayStation, because they had so many people were trying to buy them that they were able to use that power to keep their independence. But it's like, you want to keep your independence, but you're a failing studio. It sucks. And it's like, I wonder, like, it's crazy to say this, Gables, but part of the reason they wanted to break off from Activision is because Activision wanted them to like every do a couple expansions and make the next Destiny, Destiny 3. And I wonder almost if maybe that was the right idea to like, maybe instead of like doing, trying to make it a platform, and I get it, like, hey, like having that platform is the same, but the problem is like, it's hard. It's, you know, this isn't Fortnite. This isn't Apex Legends where it's, or like even like a Warzone where you can just jump in and it's always the base thing is always the same, but it's like, yeah, they're going to ask new skins, might do some funky stuff with the map, but like, The game is the game. You can I can jump back into Fortnite a year from now, and yeah, it's a little different. I got like a little bit of a learning curve, but it's the same game that I know. And Destiny is like, it's constantly expanding. It's like, I've tried multiple times like getting back into Destiny 2, and it's so fucking confusing. The onboarding is awful. Like getting around the map, like what the fuck do I need to do? Like I bought this expansion. Oh, that expansion, they actually got rid of it. It doesn't exist. It doesn't make sense for our story anymore. Like I'm like, I spent like an hour time trying to like, oh cool, I want to jump back in. And like, cause I enjoy playing Destiny 2. It's a fun game to play. And I'm like, I'm so fucking lost. I just left. And like, they make it so hard. The onboarding is awful for people to jump back in or for new fans. Mm-hmm. And then like, you're just pissing off real fans. It's hard. Like, you're just going to lose fans over time instead of, you know, gain them or sustain them. And yeah, I feel like, honestly, we talked about at the beginning of the podcast about GTA 6 being the shot in the arm. I think Destiny's the shot in the arm they need is a Destiny 3 at this point. I think, you know, Gables, would you buy Destiny 3 if it's as good as you, as we think it could be for Bungie? Would that make you jump back in Destiny 3 day one? I would for me. I'd jump back in day one.
I would if there were definitely changes that make it different than what they were doing with Destiny 2. I would if the story was very much cohesive and not as overblown or as convoluted as it can be. Lore stuff for Destiny 2, yeah, that's a different discussion in and of its entirety and stuff. Very deep, a lot of very rich stuff that go into it. But Destiny 2 suffers from some of the most convoluted, like super complicated, like aspects for a new player to actually get involved in. It's, if you miss one season, even for even a player that's been playing for years, like say for myself, that decides that I do not want to spend $10 per season in order to go and do this stupid storyline and stuff that just is going to be explained in like verbatim by a cutscene or something at the end of the season. Yeah, you're going to be really lost. And if there was an eventual Destiny 3 and it was something completely kind of like different but still remained true to its gameplay of Destiny 2, you know, I mean, yeah, that would be something I would have loved to have played.
Yeah. But yeah, like I said, I'm rooting for them. Hope they figure it out. Yeah, so not really more to add on that one. It just sucks. And it's just kind of more sad news come from a studio just a couple years ago. It seemed like they were, you know, they were just killing it. Move on to some other news this week, though. Final Fantasy 14 Dawn Trail is out. That's a big expansion. Comes out July 2nd. I added this here because it's pretty funny. They openly admitted that they internally delayed it 1 week because of the Shadow of the Erdtree expansion. So that's pretty funny. We just want to get away from that, which is funny. Next up here, Dust Golem, who is a great leaker from Capcom, said that the plan is, it sounds like, that Resident Evil 9 will be an open world game. Boo to that. And then Amy Hennig's next game has officially been, we've already known it was a Captain Marvel or Captain America Black Panther game. We actually got a like a 2.5 minute trailer just kind of showed up surprisingly at an Unreal 5 Engine showcase. Just no gameplay like that, but we got some story bits. It is officially called Marvel 1943 Rise of the Hydra, and it's coming in 2025. I'm excited for a Amy Hennig. She directed the first three Uncharted games and worked on Last of Us, and was the director for the first couple years of Uncharted 4. So I'm excited for finally. Hopefully, looks like she's going to finally get a game out. She's had nothing but issues with the studios she's worked for. So I'm rooting for her, and I'm so pumped for. An Uncharted style Marvel game, count me the fuck in from the director of Uncharted. If I'm not gonna get an Uncharted game, this is close, I gotta get to it, I'm all in, baby. But Gables, let's get into what we've been playing. Do you wanna go first? You wanna go first?
Okay. I'll go ahead and go first.
Okay.
All right. So I did make reference to this at the beginning part of the show that we were provided with a code, and the code was for the Switch version of Contra Operation Galuga. Or Galuga is what it's called. But I've had a chance to play a bit of it. I am, for a fact, knowing I'm halfway through this game already.
Nice.
The game itself isn't entirely very long. It's like around... Well, actually, I'm not going to say too much like of how long it is or like what other type of factors of the later levels, because I haven't really played past, like, say, stage 4 right now. But I've played through stages 1 through 4, did a bit of the story mode. I have done a little bit of, like, the arcade mode stuff, and it remains tried and true. Like Contra, it is hard. Definitely as difficult as what any type of Contra game is, because those games are notoriously known for being difficult. This one isn't any different. I think WayForward did a good job in terms of certain aspects of level design. There were some artwork and stuff from, like, I think some of the stages could have been improved somewhat. And that's because with the graphical style of this game, though, it's more sort of like a 3D style of, like, a 2D side-scrolling, where I kind of would have liked it if they would have done, like, a 2D sprite sort of thing, and then just kind of, like, elaborated itself. It's kind of like with the classic games, say, like, for Contra 3 and, like, Hard Corps and stuff like that, to where it just makes it much more sort of, like, distinguishable, instead of, like, just having the kind of this 3D style of look on, like, a 2D sort of, like, side scroll or, like, platform sort of shoot 'em up and stuff. But other than that, though, I mean, the gameplay's fine. I mean, it plays like actual Contra. It's smooth. You have an option to switch between two different weapons that you can acquire. There are different aspects of this game that are, like, kind of different than some other Contra games. Like, for example, you can carry two weapons at a time. One of my personal favorites is, like, carrying, like, the spread shot alongside the homing missile, like, gun and stuff. Those two are pretty fun to interchange with each other. If you collect the same power-up twice and you're still holding and stuff, it'll be leveled up to a level 2, and the attack will even be even more powerful.
Awesome.
In the Switch version, if you hit the ZL button and stuff, it causes this kind of, like, an item crash, like a weapon crash sort of thing, where it pretty much executes, like, a different type of ability based upon what weapon that you have holding. So, for example, there's one weapon to where you could use it as sort of like a shield or something when you do an item crash or something, or you can actually do, like, this big old major blast or something like that onto an enemy, like a boss or whatever. The first initial stage is more like an homage, really, to, like, the first stage of the original Contra. As a matter of fact, the game entirely itself is, like, pretty much a retelling of the original Contra. There are definitely aspects that are kind of different. Like, there are different characters introduced. There is voice acting inside this game and some cutscenes, and it's as, like, it is definitely as, like cheesy sort of, like, action style of, like, like, cutscenes as you would possibly imagine. But at the same time, there are some voice actors I do recognize. Like, the dude that voices Bill Reiser is the same dude that has given voices to a bunch of different characters inside the anime scene and stuff, like for Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop and stuff.
Huh.
This guy has a distinct, like baritone sort of voice and stuff that once you hear it, you know exactly who this dude is. But I've really just loved listening to the aspect, like, the music of this. And speaking of the music, when you earn certain, like, credits or certain type of items or get a whole bunch of different points, you actually have the option to switch between the current music and stuff and the retro-inspired music. Let me tell you something. If you had save data from previous Konami games, say like the Castlevania Collection or the Contra Collection stuff, that save data will allow you to have the soundtracks of those games on to this Contra game. So let's say you're just playing through the game, like say on like arcade mode, and you choose to listen to the theme, you know, the music of Castlevania while you're going through and doing that stuff. Yeah, you have the option of doing that. And that little odd details and stuff, those little details are very fun to actually have inside of this. I actually felt like this was a great homage and really to say, if you want to get like a classic, like Contra music or something, when you're playing this new one and stuff, it gives it a different type of like element and kind of makes it a much more like engaging in some aspects. But it's not to say that the music for Operation Galuga and stuff is bad by any means. I mean, no, far from it. But it does kind of grate a little bit in terms of the gameplay, in terms of the cutscenes. I think the cutscenes are kind of like a little bit too many in that regard, because this is an action style game. The last thing I really want to see at the end is like a cutscene that goes into like a couple things of dialogue and then go into the next particular thing. There are like six different playable characters. From what I understand, you have Bill Reiser, and then you have like a couple of other like operatives. Like they have one that does like long shot, like long range stuff. Then you have one that does like all sorts of various other power weapons and stuff. But I haven't tried all the different characters, but there are different types of fighting styles. There's actually some robots that you get to control too, it looks like. But the first four stages are not too bad at all. Actually, the ending of the boss for like stage one is like a retelling of the first boss from the original Contra. Kind of like when you get to the end of the stage, right? And you have this sort of like wall or some of like this one base, and you have this dude that is shooting some, it's like shooting you from the top of it. Then you have the two laser little guns, and then you have the big old laser that shoots out, right? Well, they had that, but all of a sudden, once you beat that, it starts to evolve to where now there's another wall that's behind you right now, right? And once you do that, all of a sudden it evolves even further to where now there's something that's like completely different of a wall grid or something. It turns that boss battle from that original Contra game into something like, okay, this is definitely a little bit more difficult this time around. But, oh my gosh. There are vehicle sections. There are lots of different types of experimental like type of weapons that you get to play as and like play with and stuff. But ultimately, this definitely does feel like a pure Contra game experience. And like I was saying, I'm halfway through the story mode right now. I haven't had a chance to play as more different characters, but from what I have been playing, I have been enjoying. But yeah, I just need to finish the rest of this game, which is not going to be too much longer. It's only probably going to be like another playthrough, and it's probably going to be another like sitting or a half a sitting or something. But the other game that I have been playing predominantly that is going to be somewhat surprising, but at the same time, it's just kind of like the weird mood that I had been in. I decided to play Phantasy Star. So Phantasy Star.
Weird?
This is a game that came... I know, right? Like I told you, man, I've been on a weird sort of trend with playing certain games this year. Like going from like games like RZ, going through the Dreamcast stuff, like going through like now Contra, Operation Galuga, and now I'm playing Phantasy Star that initially came out in 1989 on the Sega Master System. And let me tell you something. I checked out the game in terms of the length, because this is something I have been doing a lot of lately. It's like, how long do I play until I beat this game? It touts like about maybe 16 hours at most or something for this RPG, which is not bad. Actually, it's rather, it's in the middle, you know? It's like one of those kind of middle tier sort of things. It's not like a 40-hour plus experience. It's not like this and that. I've never played one of these old school RPGs before. So it's something that's new. So you start off as a girl called Alys. You start off with this in your hometown. You have to find this one man, Odin, right? Because like your brother gets killed and stuff because of this evil like sort of king, or this evil like sort of like emperor or something like that, is trying to take over like your cinematic universe, and every type of resource around you is just starting to go to shit. And along the way and stuff, you encounter different types of party members that will join your team and this and that. It is definitely a classic JRPG in the sense where you have to do a lot of grinding from the get-go. So, to be perfectly honest with you, Tyler, this game is definitely going to be unapproachable for some people, because as soon as you leave the opening area, you immediately are hit with frequent like random battles, and at the same time, you will be attacked by pretty much a lot of strong enemies at that point, because you start at level 1. You know how like certain RPGs, they start you at level 5 just to get you a little bit comfortable and stuff and this and that. Every time, like, here's the thing. You start off at level 1 with your character. When party members join your party, they also start at level 1. Oh, I know, right? But I end up discovering the loop where if I stayed in the home area itself, and this home area is not exactly like small, right? It's like you literally have like two different sort of towns that are just close together. And that beginning part, there's like a small patch of grass to where you can grind upon like particular enemies. That's how the game kind of wants to try to lead you to kind of level up your character a little bit and stuff. And then when you finally get back to like their hometown and stuff, there's a building that heals you for free,
Oh, cool.
right?
Okay.
So on top of that, you use that, Tyler, to just collect a lot of like the random funds until you can buy better weapons or better armor and stuff. Now, being a JRPG from back then, it is extremely vague in terms of like which armor, which weapons, or which things are good. So it's like, how was I able to go forth and like make decisions based upon that? Well, if you go to the pause menu, the game itself actually tells you about the descriptions of the items, the weapons, the different types of spells your characters are going to use and stuff. It basically has a guide in terms of what these items do, what your characters will learn at certain levels. So it will actually help you in that aspect, so you're not having to scroll online and try to discover, like, okay, what attacks do I have to be at in order to do this? Or what level am I going to be at and do that? So that convenience, that quality of life, I've been using that as a plenty, because I'm currently like at level 14 with my main character. Like, I have two other party members, one of them being Odin and stuff, which I'll tell you how you actually get this guy in your party, because it's kind of funny. So after I do my grinding, after I earn up enough money to get pretty much one of the best weapons, the best shield, the best armor and stuff, there's a cave to the south. There's a cave to the south and stuff that you have to explore. You have to buy an item in order to light up this cave, right? 200 like little gold or something like that in order to do that. So I light up, I start going through this first person perspective and stuff with like an RPG, like, you know, kind of like how they used to do for dungeon crawlers and stuff. Encounter enemies, kill them. Then I come across a dude that is turned into a statue. And here's the thing. So when you check the statue, your character's like, okay, how? That's like, I wonder how I can get this guy like unthawed, you know, kind of like out of like the statue's things. So what you have to do is you have to save up enough money, get a road pass from your main village, and then get like a passport, you know, so you have to save, get these two different things. That allows you to talk to an NPC inside the town to get access into like a space shuttle thing, to where now you have to use your passport to get on a space shuttle to go to the town that you need to encounter a certain character to give like an item to for him to give you an like your actual first member of your party, right? So all these different steps you have to do in order to get the party member that actually has the serum to turn this character from stone to back to a regular man and stuff. I would not have been able to come across this without having to, one, talk to NPC characters inside of the towns, because they do give some helpful hints. Two, looking it up online, because at one point I was like, okay, how the fuck do I get this guy turned back into human? And this is like one or two things I had to do, and I was missing these one or two minute little details. So here I am right now. I'm like 5 hours into this game. The enemies inside of this game, they can be a bit difficult, but I'm now at a point where my main character is at level 14. I think the max level, I think, is at level 20.
Jesus.
Oh, I had the cough because of a lot of talking. Ah. But every party member that you get in your party, it increases the amount of potential enemies that you could potentially face in like a random encounter. So for example, one member of my party, like say, just my main character Alys herself, right? A maximum of two enemies will try to attack you, right? The next party member I get, all of a sudden that multiplies by two again, and so it's like, okay, now a maximum of four people are going to be able to try to... four enemies are going to try to attack you and kill both of you. So finally, when I get Odin and get all his armor and get all his things and stuff, the amount of enemies like multiply again to where now you can have a max possibility of having six enemy characters face you at once. And if you're not properly prepared, if you don't have the right equipment or everything else like that, it could be a bad time. But what I can say is I absolutely love the music of this game. It's very peaceful. It's very serene. I love the aspect of going inside the dungeons, because the dungeons are definitely a little bit more vast. But even with like some of the nuisances of the quality of life stuff, there are interesting aspects of the original Phantasy Star that can be fun. But I'm very much glad this is not like a 40-plus hour RPG, because I only spent like maybe 5 hours just doing all these things that I was now describing to you, which probably like in, what, 10 minutes or so. But I'm just chipping away at it. And right now I'm just doing a little bit more like level grinding and stuff for Odin, and all of a sudden this little cat that's inside my party right now. And I don't know where the hell else this game is going to go, but I do know is there's going to be some sort of hovercraft I'm going to be having to fly soon. So I'm like, okay, this hyper-realistic, like, sci-fi fantasy game, like, based upon, you know, different type of, like, galaxy or something in the universe. Man, this game's out there, but at the same time, I can totally understand how people got into this game back in the day.
Yeah.
But other than that, man, that's what I've been playing, so tell me what you got.
all right, well, after 87 hours, Gables.
Yeah.
I've finally beaten Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. So it's taken me a few weeks, but I finally got it done. Pretty much been taking up pretty much all my free time that I've had for the last about 3-4 weeks now. I don't know where to begin on this one.
Okay.
Just kind of give my final thoughts here. Go ahead, Gables. What were you going to say?
Okay, so I do probably have some couple questions for you. Like, one, did you finish all the mini games?
No. So I did enough to at least get like ranked in all of them. I didn't do all. I did that, but all right. I'll start there. So I remember I was doing like everything, you know, I eventually mini games was the thing that broke me where like, I'm not going to get the top score to all these. Cause I'm like,
right.
Like they're not fun enough to like, they're just long enough and they're not fun enough to like want like that one more time mentality. Like you did it a few times. Like, all right, I've wasted like an hour playing this lame ass Rocket League game. I'm going to move on. So I was doing everything I did all. So I'm going to start off right now. I did all of the open world stuff. I did all of the missions in there. I found all the towers, did all the side quests and that part. Then there are the actual like side quest itself. I talked about last week. I was on the last one I thought I had left, which was you have to like beat the gold cup in the chocobo races. Before that, you have to beat like 7 or 8 races before you get to the gold cup. I did do that. And I was like, finally, I'm done with the side quest. There's one more side quest, Gables. You want to know what that side quest entails you to do?
Well, what does it do?
So remember I told you there is the high scores in all of the mini games?
Yeah.
This one requires you to beat the expert score in all of the mini games. So...
Oh, come on.
I was like, I did like 2 and I'm like, no, I'm not doing, fuck this,
dude,
I'm out. So
that is ridiculous in terms of padding. I mean, come on.
Yeah, I was like, fuck that. Like, no, I'm not doing it. So I didn't do it. That was like the thing that I did every other side quest. I did all the open world stuff. I did almost all of the VR training, like combat training stuff in there.
Uh-huh.
I think it was like 50 something to do. I was in like the 40s by the time I was done with them.
Right.
I fought most of the optional bosses. There is one more mission I wanted to do, that would require you to like do a lot of traveling. And I was just like, I'm going to come back. Like, this is the thing I'm going to probably come back for, or I'll do like New Game Plus or something like that, if that ever does come. Because I don't think there's going to be too much more like content, like story content that I was like, because the main reason I was doing a lot of stuff was because I felt like the story content was good. Like those side quests, most of the side quests I talked about a lot last week, man, they're bad. A lot of them are just not fun to play, but they give you enough like just conversations with your buddies. And like some of them actually lead to like, I can't believe like this content is like actually pretty important, I think, to like some of these characters here. And they involve like important like characters that are like, they're not of the main group, but they're like characters that are like, they're important characters, like side characters of the game. And like, there's like some really good character building and story content that are like tied to some of these side quests. And then some side quests where I'm just like, why is this here? This fucking, it was nothing. This one, like, it introduced a brand new character that has nothing to do with the game, that's only involved in this one side quest, and then I move on. And I'm like, okay. And it's honestly, all right. There is an issue, a design flaw in Square Enix with the way they give out some of these side quests. Is the main issue what, I mean, I love Final Fantasy 16. I put almost 70 hours in that game. But man, I feel like I wasted like a solid 15 hours on dumb bullshit. And it was the same. My complaints are exactly the same as this, where it's like, man, they put some really good, like some of the side characters, like they have like plots that come in like Final Fantasy 16 that are in the main story from these characters, but they get played out in the side quest. But the problem is some of these side quests, like I said, are absolute bullshit and go nowhere and lead and have like, it's just like, oh, complete waste of time. And some of these side quests are like, what? This is main story quality. And why is this here? Why is this behind? Like, why are you putting this really good content behind this bullshit that's not fun to play? Or like, I'm like, hey, you know, well, it's there. It's awesome. They want me to play it. But I'm like, well, make it fucking fun. Make it fun for me to do. Why? Like, and that's my frustration is like, the biggest thing is I feel like I'm just wasting so much time. And I,
yes,
it sucks because like, when I'm in the main game, when I'm playing through the main story, man, I fucking love this goddamn game. It is so good. I am having such a great time. It's with all my buddies. Kate Sith, I love that fucker. That little goofy looking son of a bitch. He's the coolest goddamn character in all video games. I'm gonna say it right fucking now. It makes me like these characters that like Vincent and Sid and Yuffie, like especially Yuffie and Vincent, because they were like optional characters you can find in the OG Final Fantasy VII, or like they were just like kind of background characters. I never used them, never played as them. And this, like, they're actually really good. Like, I actually like Yuffie a lot. Kate Sith, same thing, where, like, Kate Sith was, like, a back. Like, obviously, there's, like, the core four. There's Aerith, Cloud, Barret, and Tifa. And then, like, but then there's just, like, the other, like, is there eight? Nine? I think there's nine main characters in the game now. And then there's the other ones that are just, like, it's kind of, like, they're just kind of there. They don't really, like, I never use them. Don't really care. And, like, but this one, it's, like, man, I like, they just, like, and, like, the way they, like, when you're, like, in the main story where, like, they break off characters and they force you to use them. You know, Red 13, I thought about Red 13 as well. And, like, they did such a great job of, like, forcing me to use these characters, but, like,
right.
But they built, like, the fights and everything around, like, so it makes sense for what they're doing. So, like, some of the characters, like, some of these characters, like, when you're fighting, like, flying enemies, it could fucking suck using Kate Sith or, Kate Sith or Red 13 against flying enemies. But, like, they do such a great job of, like, building the enemies you're going to see during those events around the characters you're using. And I love that. And, like, the stories they tell, like, everything, the things they expanded upon were great. Because, like, some, like, areas, like, literally is, like, a 2-minute scene in the main game, the original game. And, like, they padded this thing up to, like, a 2.5-3-hour long thing. But they, like, add so much quality content to it. It is so great. Like, the combat, like I said, like I said a couple weeks ago, they didn't drastically change it. They just kind of built upon it, which is great. Because, like, that combat was awesome. Like, I love the combat in 7 Remake so much more than I did in 16. I liked the 16 combat, but the 7 Remake was awesome. And they just kind of added onto it and built onto it. And I loved it for what it was. And, like, just find a way to, like, work in and, like, use everybody's abilities together. And, like, it just kind of added more to it and, like, made you want to, like, switch up the party, because you only have three at a time. And the open world, stuff like that, you, for the most of the game, you can play as any three you want. So, like, it kind of made me want to switch out and use different characters because of, like, the way their abilities work together. But it's so far, like, I will say, if you are a fan and you want to play this game, do not play it the way I did. Just play it the way you want to play it. But I say, like, Signfall, the way, like, I hate that, like, when you, like, all right, you beat a main mission, and then they just, like, dump 5-6 side stories on you at a time. It just kills the flow of the game. And it's, like, cool. And it's just, like, there was multiple days where I played for 6-7 hours, and I didn't even progress the story at all because I was just doing the side content. Wow. And it's, like, obviously, it's, like, do you have to do that? I know I don't have to do it, but it's, like, like I said, they just give you enough. Like, if you're a fan like me, they give you enough in the side content where it's like, well, this could be really important. Like, or, like, some of the side quests were bad, but, like, what I got at the end, I'm like, well, that's kind of worth it. I like what I got here. Like, I like the character building. I like the little 2-minute cutscene I got between Barret and Cloud or something in this. Or, like, it kind of, like, it added so much more background to these characters, and, like, it made you, like these characters more, like, love these characters more than I already love them.
Right.
I find a better way to do that. But, I feel like they do a better job of, like, introducing these side stories. And also kind of, like, it kind of kills, like, the, you know, like, when you're, like, playing, like, an open world game and you, like, you just wander upon a side quest. Instead of, like, you just open up the map and there's just a green dot where the side quest is, and I just walk over there, trigger it, go do the mission. I don't, like, kind of, like, I don't know, instead of just, like, handing it to me, like, I kind of want, like, let me, like, find it, you know? I don't know. Or if I don't want to do that way, I'll just look it up. I'll YouTube it. Like, how do I do this thing? Let me do that. But, like, I mentioned, like, last week, I did, like, whenever I did, like, side stories that didn't have, like, a crazy boss fight or something at the end where I'm just fighting generic enemies I've killed a million times, I just eventually put it on easy because I was like, I just want to get through this as fast as possible to get to the little carrot you've been dangling in front of me here. But moving on here. Going back to, like, the main stuff, I love it. It's so much fun. I love, like, the combat's great, the story's great. I like where everything's going. Like, it's crazy to me that, like, they, like, this is just disc one of Final Fantasy VII, which I don't know, probably took, like, you probably get through, like, 15 hours or so, 20 hours maybe,
right,
in the original game, and they, like, made two gigantic games where, like, you could, it's like 150, 120, 150 hours of content in these in these two games here for what was one disc.
Wow.
You know, 25 years ago. I'm not going to spoil anything, but Gables, I mentioned before the game came out, was my biggest concern was, are they going to Square Enix this thing? The story. Because, like, I loved Remake, and, like, at that point, I never played the OG Final Fantasy VII. Remake was all I knew. And, like, I loved the first, like, all the way up to, like, that. Everything was great. It was his own really great story. I loved all the characters. And then that last chapter was like super fucking confusing. I'm like, where the fuck is this going? And then I went back, I replayed OG, and then went back and replayed Remake. And like a lot of things they teased throughout the game, like made more sense to me. I'm like, okay, I know where they're going with this. And then I replayed that last chapter. I'm like, all right, well, I'm still really kind of confused here, but like where the fuck, like they made it really convoluted and kind of like, but I'm like, whatever, I'm along for the ride. I loved everything else they did before that. Like, I'm here for it. Like, they're doing some crazy shit here. They're like, okay, cool. This really bad Advent Children movie you made. You're kind of tying that into this game. That's a weird choice, but I'm here for it. Crisis Core. Okay. This game that's exclusive on the PSP. All right. You're interested. That's weird, but I'm along for the ride. And my biggest concern was like, are they going to Square Enix this thing? Are they going to make it like super convoluted and like, where the fuck is this going? Gables. They're kind of doing it, and I'm really concerned. I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm not going to say anything more, but man, I was really, I'm like the last like 2 hours, I'm like, what the fuck is happening? And since then I thought about it a lot. I kind of get where they're going with it. And I kind of like it. I like it a lot less than when I was confused. So I'm really, really concerned because God damn it. I'm like, man, you're doing it. And then somehow the last chapter of both games, you kind of just make it, you just do some weird shit for no real reason. And I feel like they're maybe overthinking a little bit. I'm like, I need you guys to bring it down a little bit. I don't know. Cause like to me, like the best part of this game is just like, it's the story, it's the characters, it's everything. It's this world, everything like that. Like it's all built around that. And then they just like, man, like what are we doing? I don't hate it. I just don't love it, Gables, and I'm concerned because it's like, I don't, you know. And then like, well, now you kind of have to play Crisis Core Reunion to kind of get what's happening here. You kind of have to play OG. I guess you don't have to play OG Final Fantasy VII to understand it. But you know, where like Remake really held up on its own, except for that last chapter was a little confusing. Mm-hmm. But even like I said, going back and replaying OG Final Fantasy VII, then watching Advent Children. And then playing the remake, I was still kind of confused, but I got a lot more than what they were going for. As somebody that's done all those things now, like definitely helps to like, I feel like you kind of need to play Reunion to understand where the story is going. And it still, at the end of the day, doesn't make a lot of sense. I don't know, Gables.
Huh.
I love this game. I really do. It's coming out of it though. Like to me, like Remake was immediately one of the greatest games of all time to me. Like immediately shot up to like in my top 15, top 20, which maybe is like, well, that's pretty far down, but like we play a lot of games. That's saying something. That's I would say now it's probably my top 10 favorite games of all time. And like, I still love Rebirth. Like I put 80 something hours into it for a fucking reason. But man, like, overall, and like I know I've been pretty negative on this for the most part, but I would still say though, like, it's still it's a phenomenal game. It's a great game. I love this game so much. There's a lot of design flaws, a lot of pacing issues in that ending, which honestly, but it's also one of those things where it's like, I don't know. Sometimes when you're that middle game or that middle thing in a trilogy of like a movie or whatever, the ending can always be a little rough. Like Mass Effect 2. The ending wasn't very good, and Mass Effect 2 was like considered one of the greatest games of all time. But that last boss was pretty bad. Other than the fact it was like a suicide mission thing, it wasn't a really great ending. So, go ahead.
And like kind of another example, you know, is with Halo 2, to where that game is considered to be an excellent game and probably one of the best games and stuff from that genre, but the ending of that and stuff, you know, the ending of that game really left a lot of things to be desired because of how it ended and stuff. And it created like a more desire to play and finish the fight on Halo 3.
Yeah. So I'm wondering if it's maybe one of those things where it's like, maybe in the, when the third one comes out, this one will stand better on its own, but it's all about how they pay it off. Honestly, how they're going to do it. Cause like I said, I actually love this game. It's going to be really hard not to make this game my game of the year. I swear to God, I love this game, people. I really do. I just coming out of it, I'm just like, Like, okay, they went a direction I'm not a fan of, but if they can, I have faith that they could pay it off because they've done such a great job otherwise. Just fix the pacing and pay off that ending and make it work, and I'm here for it. But yeah, I don't know, like, I would still put it, like, if I had to put a score on it, it's still like a 9 out of 10 to me. It really is. It's just, I can't wait. I imagine in like a year or two, I'm going to replay through this game and I'll just do it like a straight run through, and I'll probably love it so much more and have like, I'll like it so much more and because of that. But, I wish I played this game differently. I think I hurt myself more than anything by playing it the way I played it. It's a great game. I promise it's a great game. But that's all I've been playing. I did pick up my copy here. I hit the mic. Sorry. I did pick up my copy though of Rise of the Ronin. I will talk about that. I've only played it for like an hour. I will talk about that more next week. But if you like all this, please like, follow, subscribe. Check us out everywhere. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, anywhere podcasts are on. We're on it. We're on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube. Please check us out all those places. Like, follow, subscribe, 5-star reviews, leave comments, tell your friends, share with all of them. I really would appreciate if you did that. I was your host. I was Tyler.
And I've been Colonel Gables. So until next time, everyone, thank you for listening to another fun-filled episode of the Drunk-Nerds Podcast.
And Nick Gables?
Yep.
Too sweet?
Too sweet, man.
Bye, guys.
See ya.